It's been a long time with the state to get on.
Welcome to the second in this Rosh Hashanah series. I think there might be enough room if you want to scooch up or... Well, there's one more seat at the table. Okay, this is the second in this Musar of Rosh Hashanah series. And tonight, I want to move at pretty quick pace like we did last time, so you'll be able to do homework if you want to. but I'm going to cram it all into one session. What I would like to do with you tonight is actually help you create one of these. This is my Elul plan from last year. This is what a finished one will look like. Everything on one sheet of paper. I'm going to help you work through that tonight. You'll probably want to, I suggest that you start by taking notes on the white sheet of paper, which basically has notes on it already. But we'll move through that, and then you can transfer it over to the yellow sheet of paper, or you can just start writing on the yellow sheet of paper. I'm guessing that the yellow one will be a rough draft for you. Fill it in, but it would be, if possible, very important to finish this yellow document before Shabbos, because Shabbos this week is the 25th day of Elul. So does anybody know why that day is special besides Miriam? You can say Miriam, go.
I just listened to
Keep It Hot. Oh, good. Okay. So say, why is it special?
Okay, it's the formation of the world. I mean, it was the first of the 6 days.
That's right. So excellent. Good job. So Rosh Hashanah is the birthday of the world, but that's really the birthday of the world. It's the birthday of the sixth afternoon. The afternoon of the sixth day when man was created, when Adam got a soul. That's what Rosh Hashanah is the anniversary of. So that's the sixth day. When was the first day? So if you count back those days, the first day was this coming of Shabbos, the 25th of Elul. So this Shabbos. So that means the world is beginning to be recreated from this Shabbos through Rosh Hashanah. So this is there's a very strong energy of recreation during that time. So it's great to do some homework. There's, you know, Elul is a month of tshuva, but there are two distinct flavors of tshuva that's done. So the tshuva of Elul is different than the tshuva of the 10 days of tshuva. So the tshuva in the 10 days of repentance, the 10 days of tshuva, is a tshuva of the regular variety, meaning saying sorry for what you've done, recognizing, admitting, apologizing, and committing to changing. Those are the three steps. And see what you did wrong, so then admit what you did wrong. Apologize, regret. So admit, regret, and commit are the three steps of tshuva. Commit to not do it again. So those are the classic three steps. Admit, apologize, admit, let's say, how did I say it before?
Regret.
Admit, regret, commit. Those are the three stages. In order to admit before stage one, you have to actually recognize. And in order to carry out your commitment after stage three, you have to make a plan. But the three classic stages are the admit, regret, commit. So so that's the classic tshuva that's done during the 10 days of repentance. However, Elul is also a time of repentance, and certainly that kind of tshuva can be done any time during the year. But what's special about the month of Elul is a slightly different type of tshuva, and that's the tshuva of return. They're both returning, but returning to your flight path. So I was thinking about this. Somebody gave, I think it's actually a Stephen Covey mushel that I heard once, Stephen Covey parable. Ladies, you need a yellow and a white sheet that are over here. Hi. So he talks about being on your path and what it's like for an airplane that's flying. An airplane, my grandfather was a pilot, and before he would take a trip, he would file a flight path that he was planning on traveling on. He flew a small plane, but still you had to file your flight path. But so you know pretty much from when you take off in Wichita, Kansas, or he took off from Sheboygan, Wisconsin, he was going to land in Wichita, Kansas, he would know probably within 100 feet where he was going to land, right, where his plane would touch down. And he had a path that he would file with a map that he would draw a line. But was he on that exact line the entire time that he was flying? He wasn't, and you aren't. Even somebody who's flying a commercial jetliner from New York to Tokyo, so they also know where they're taking off and within about 100 feet approximately where they're going to touch down on that runway when they get to Tokyo. And they have a flight pattern, but they're constantly truing the course. So they know exactly where it's going to be, but they're usually not on the exact path that they filed. They're constantly truing it, getting back to that. So they're approximately on that course, but always moving back onto the flight path. So that's the tshuva of Elul, is returning to your flight course. But in order to return to your flight course, you actually have to file a flight plan. And that's what your Elul plan is drawing the line that you want to accomplish this year. So really, this document, while we're going to draw the line on the document, the way that we draw it is by withdrawing that line from our inner recesses. That line is already written. We just have to discern what it is and put it on a piece of paper so that our eyes can see it, so that our brain can comprehend it. But it's already in our kishkas. We just have to access it. So that's what I want to help you do tonight. And there's really two processes to access it. So tonight we're going to be using much more of the intuitive process. And then I would recommend that you take home your document and engage some of your intellect as well. But the intuitive process is what you're going to have to use tonight, because we're going to move fast. So you're not going to have a chance to really contemplate every little area that we're going to go through. So you should just write down, take notes on your white sheet of paper, which we're just basically going to read together here. But then transfer it over to you with some thought. Go through it afterwards. And with some thought, then transfer it over how you want it to be onto your yellow sheet of paper. Let me just, before we start writing, the yellow sheet of paper, your Elul document, your Elul plan for the year, if you choose to use it this way, the way to that's recommended to for it to be used by the Slonim Rebbe, who I didn't learn straight from him, I learned from Rabbi Aryeh Niven, but the technique that he taught is to actually have this document and review it daily, that it's just part of your life. So you can print it in half size, if you can see that small, and stick it in your planner, or fold it and put it in your sitter. But it's something that's just a daily, once you have it nice and concise like this, it's just a daily view. You just want to see what's your map for the year each day. Looking at what's your, and I'll go through these words, what's your yud, what's your tikkun, what are your 12 areas of life balance, what's your yearly direction. So we're going to go through all of that, but it's nice to create the document and then review it on a daily basis or a weekly basis or however often you get to it basis. And then you have it next Elul. For the Cheshbon HaNefesh that we did last week, it's something that you can really use as a document to see what did I accomplish, where did I fall short, what would I like to change my strategy on, what do I feel like I'm still doing just a little bit slower than I wanted to, what's no longer important to me, what's more important to me, so that you have that document to work with. Okay, any questions so far? Okay, then let's start. We left off last week with some homework, which was your own internal homework to do, to consider what your yud might be and your tikkun. So yud we're defining as your life's mission. What is your specific purpose in this world? We all human beings have a general purpose. All Jews as a subset have a general purpose. And then each individual, Jewish and non-Jewish, has their own specific purpose. So in general, the Jewish purpose is, and it might even, I think the non-Jewish purpose is slightly different, so I'll just express the Jewish purpose is to perfect yourself and perfect the world. That's the general purpose of every Jew. Make a Kiddush Hashem, sanctify the name of God in perfecting self and perfecting the world. And then that's a dual and reciprocal process where you perfect yourself through perfecting the world and you perfect the world through perfecting yourself. So working on both helps you accomplish the other. That's the Jewish general thing that we're supposed to be doing. So everything that we do should generally fit into that. But now we have to figure out what's our own frequency. What's our own song that we're supposed to be singing, our own thing that we're supposed to be focusing on? What's the thing that only we can bring into the world, the thing that only we can work on? So that's our specific life's purpose. So in order to think of that, the exercise, there's a few exercises you can do, but one of the exercises that I offered for you just to consider last week is, if you had $1 billion and everything in your life is taken care of, your kids are in the best schools, your parents are totally healthy, your marriage is in fabulous shape, your friends are all their needs are satisfied, like you have, everything is all set, and you have 4 extra hours a day and $1 billion. What do you want to do with it? Right? What calls to you? What do you want to do with all that time and money. What would you like to accomplish with it? So what comes up for you? So you don't have to say it, but you could just start writing it. What is something, and it might be an area. So it might be healing as an area, or you might specifically know you want to be an herbologist, right? So it might be a general area at this point. It might be a thought, a cloudy thought. It might be something very specific. You might know exactly what your yud is. Some people do, and you might be wondering, but it's something to work with. What is something that really calls you? And if you have a hard time after you've thought about it for a while, you can give me a call and we can discuss it on the phone just to try to tease out some different things. But you need to give some thought to what really feels like it's calling to you. What do you really wish you can do? Now, you don't have to put the practical into this yet. It's possible that what's calling to you is not something that you can accomplish. Let's say what you really feel like you really are drawn to doing is making sure that there is clean drinking water for every villager in Africa. But you know, like, you live here. That's just not your thing. You can't do it right now. So, but that's okay. You could put that down, you know, public health or that specific thing, whatever it is, you could put it down, and then we can talk about what happens if, you know, you're blocked from accomplishing your yield. But it's not just a wish. You wish everybody had that, but what do you really feel like is your thing to work on, your thing to bring to the world? And it doesn't have to be a public health issue. It doesn't have to be a specific any one accomplishment even. It can be a direction. It can be a field. It can be a thought. Something strong that's a general theme that your life would coalesce around very nicely if you could give it that opportunity. So that's yud. So that's your specific life's purpose. So in this space, that's where you would identify and articulate your specific life mission. I made the white sheet for you to write something on if you want to, but also to remember so that you have some notes. Usually I don't give out notes before, or I give out cryptic notes because I don't like people to read ahead, but I decided that for tonight, for this, I'll just give out the notes straight up and you can start writing right on this piece of paper. Okay, the next thing is your tikkun. This is the major thing that's in the way of your life working well. The one big thing of yours, not the major person, it's not your boss, it's not your spouse, it's not a kid that's really difficult. If it's your money, it might be how you handle your money. It might be organization, it might be tolerance, it might be anger, it might be passion, it might be joy. What's the thing that's in your way? What's the theme that you keep bumping up against time and again that just gets in your way? It gets in the way of your family life, it gets in the way of your professional life, it gets in the way of your spiritual life. What is your main stumbling block? You might have a few, and you'll have to think about what your main one is. You could write two, but it'd be nice if you could figure out the one main thing that's your big stumbling block, your main tikkun, the thing that you need to work on, your major piece. Doesn't mean there's not lots of other little pieces, but your big piece. So that's what your tikkun would be. When you're going to write your tikkun eventually, it would be nice to have it be in a nice short sentence, something that you could almost memorize. And then if you would want to do, let's say, an asterisk to give it a little bit more definition, you could do that. So I'll just tell you, just for an example, what mine is, so that it's easy to hear what one could sound like. So here's my yud. To help others discern their path and walk upon it. Short. Right, I had it much longer at first, so I wrote for myself a means to that. So I have a goal and a means because I felt like that was very short, and it took me a long time to get to that. First, I had kind of a paragraph, so it was long, even longer than this, but I wrote it as a goal to help Jews discover, embark upon, and continue walking on a deep, clear, positive path, and to transform individuals and humanity thereby, bringing humankind to its ultimate fruition. That was my initial youth statement, okay? I have big goals. But I realized that's long. And I did put in there specifically Jews. I decided I'm narrowing my work. I'm specifically concentrating on Jews. But I see it in the context of all humanity. But I needed to bring it into something much shorter and simpler than that. And so that whole sentence translates into to help others discern their path and walk upon it. That's my yud. So, and my tikkun, I have a means for that also. My means for accomplishing that goal is to educate and inspire others to connect to God, self, and other Jews, and the rest of humanity through example, teaching, and writing. And my main tikkun is Seder, to create Seder in my mind, in my life, and in my environment. Mm-hmm. I initially wrote my tikkun as to emulate Hashem by creating Seder in my mind, in my life, and in my environment. And it took me a while to figure out that I so didn't want to create Seder that I couldn't even look at creating Seder by itself, creating order in my life. Seder is order. I had to put it into terms that I wanted to do, to emulate Hashem. I want to emulate Hashem. I don't feel like creating Seder. I hate Seder, and yet I need Seder. Seder is in my way of everything, right? Lack of Seder is in my way of everything. So, but I so like have a hard time with Seder that I couldn't even approach at first thinking about creating Seder for Seder's sake. I could create Seder because God makes Seder, and I want to be like God, so I want to make Seder like God makes Seder. But I had to, like, it took me probably a month to see what I was doing, that I was hiding behind a second spiritual step to avoid the main step that I needed to work on. So that might come as you work with it, as you repeat it to yourself or think about it, what and winnow it down a little bit, what your process might be. But it could be longer at first, and then you can work with this yud and tikkun, how you might want to say it. And so then I just put for myself, lack of Seder is impediment, lack of follow-through, lack of strength in saying no to self, to others, and in not taking on unreasonable amounts of work / purpose. So that I had to realize that both work and purpose could be in the way of Seder. So that it could even be something good that was getting in the way of my tikkun. So all those things. So I just wanted to share that so you could see some of the process a little bit. Okay. Now, the yud and the tikkun is your main thing to work on here. I mean, in terms of formulating it just right. Those need to have a nice formulation. So you want the intuitive, what came up for you now, or what hopefully will come up for you, just bubble up. And then to work on it with your intellectual mind, also to kind of get it to a sentence that you like, and then allow your intuitive mind to play with that. Is that really what it is over time? But along with that, then, in order to accomplish one's yud, and in order to be able to tackle one's tikkun, one has to have the rest of their life in relative balance. So when things are out of balance, so that's why I wrote this sentence, you can't live your yud when you're living in emergency. That's straight from Rabbi Nevin. If everything is an emergency, if you can't find that receipt for that thing that you have to return, and you know that the warranty is running out and whatever it is, so then you're not free to do the writing that you want to do the helping that you want to do, to live in peace with other people as you want to. You have to, then you just have to save money to buy a new dishwasher because you blew it with, you know, whatever it was. So so if you're living in an emergency, you can't live your yud. So how can you, or there's lots of other emergencies that could be here, a health emergency because you didn't take care of health things properly. There's health emergencies even if you do, but many emergencies can be avoided if you have balance in these areas. So here are 12 areas that one could seek to establish some balance in. The first one is cheshbon. Cheshbon meaning an accounting, just like we did last time. An accounting, an evaluation, is something that's necessary for an overview of everything. So this is really a cheshbon ha-nefesh. This first cheshbon refers to cheshbon ha-nefesh, an accounting of the soul. One needs to establish a system for evaluating where you are holding spiritually. And you might want to write your sentence on a weekly basis, on a daily basis, on a monthly basis. How are you going? What's the system that you are thinking about for this year? If you haven't thought about it, then think about it. What do you want to do? Is it something that you already do? Put in what you already do. Are you the type that before you say Shema at night, you go through your day and think about it and try to recreate situations that didn't work so well, recreate them in a good way? So write that down. That's working for you. So you could put nightly review of day, you know, and then you might want to add into that a weekly review of systems or something like that so that you make sure that everything is getting reviewed the way you want. But that's what cheshbon is. And so you might want to figure out this is to start with a rough draft, what you might want to work towards this year, what you think you might be able to implement this year. Learning. This is Torah learning. And I guess you could make it into wider learning if there's some other subject that you're trying to tackle. But in general, we do need regular Torah learning in our lives. So what amount or Torah learning goal would you like to commit to this year? Is it weekly? Is it daily? Is it a certain book that you want to get through? Is a certain concept that you want to deepen an understanding of? Is it a combination of those things? So what is the learning
question.
Goal that you have? Mm-hmm.
Question on Torah learning as from a woman's perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, can Torah learning fall under the category of expanding your amuna?
Absolutely.
Reading those kind of books.
Absolutely.
That take yes. into account in challenge.
Yes. So Torah learning from a woman's perspective, what does that mean? Right? So I've said before, but probably not to this whole group, so I'll say it again, a good way to understand a difference between Torah learning for men and Torah learning for women is that Torah learning for men is lishma. They learn Torah for Torah learning's sake. It's like, for a man, it's like plugging in your cell phone at night. You just have to get charged. You need straight up electricity to be able to function during the day. Doesn't matter which socket you plug it into, you need the electricity. You need a man has a mitzvah to connect through Torah. It doesn't actually matter. It does for a lot of other things. But in terms of the mitzvah, it doesn't matter if he's interested, if it's helpful, if it helps him grow or not. It's the learning that's what's important. It's lishma, for the sake of the learning. For women, it's completely different. The word that encompasses women's learning is uvachein, which means, and so. So we don't sit to learn for nothing, not for nothing, for anything. We sit to learn for something. You have to be able to get, a woman needs to be able to get up from the table and say, and so, after she learned something. And so my emunah is stronger. And so I understand Shabbos better. And so I understand Elul better. And so what? And so my life will be different. How? So a woman has to learn for two reasons. One is to know what to do. And two is to desire to do it. Those are the two main reasons that a woman learns Torah. To know what to do and to desire to do it. So for some women, there is very little necessary to be able to desire to do mitzvot or to keep the laws of the Torah. So if you think about Mazal in Morocco 300 years ago, she didn't need a special emunah building shiur. She didn't need to understand the esoteric things of anything. She didn't need an Elul plan. That wasn't her life. She lived, she did, she kept Shabbos, she kept kosher, she, you know, kept Tarat Mishpacha. That was her life, and she was good with it. She was not asking deep questions. Most of the Mazals were not. But Susan in Manhattan today needs Gemara to be able to do it, for sure. You know, she needs it. She needs that intellectual exercise. She's an attorney. She's all day long working with her brain. And reading some fluffy book of stories of the great tzaddikim will never get her to a place where she feels good about keeping the halacha. And there's plenty of us everywhere in between where some of us love fluffy stories. Some of us need fluffy stories along with additional things. We need biographies. We need Rabbi Tatz. We need esoteric understandings. We need Hebrew language. We need the mathematical stuff. We need the logic of halacha, depending on who you are and what resonates with you. Women get to pick what they want to learn. We have a lot of leeway in it. So knowing what to do, that's a basic. You can learn that in the kitchen. You don't have to learn that from a book. You can learn that from your mother. You can learn it from a friend. You can be shown it. And you don't have to open a book for that. You don't have to open a book for the other realm either. So for a woman, learning can be sitting and learning, having a conversation with somebody, asking, how does that work for you? You know, I had a difficult time with whatever, and I'm trying to put this in perspective. That's Torah for a woman. It can be Torah for a man too, but that is feminine Torah. So definitely that. So and then the question is, what do you need? Torah, Musar, and that's why this is the Musar of Rosh Hashanah, Musar, the science of connecting Torah to our lives, how we bring Torah inside of ourselves, that requires self-knowledge. So there is no prescription that can be written for that. Nobody can say at this stage, you're a post-seminary girl, you should be doing X, Y, and Z. You're a new empty nester, you should be doing A, B, and C. You're a 40-year-old busy building your career, you should be doing what? There is no prescription for a woman at all whatsoever. You have to know, what do you need to grow best? So, and that's what you would put here. What's your goal? Are you curious about something? Do you really want to make sure you have the Parsha every week? Do you want to make sure that one of my goals, and I didn't have it on here, but I wrote it somewhere else, I think. For learning, I wrote daily Parsha, Nach, and or Musar. So I want daily learning. And that's what I was focusing on. didn't do that great a job on it this year, I have to say, but it's good to be able to look back on it. So, but I decided, as the year went on, I decided, what do I want out of Parsha? I have a specific goal in learning Parsha. At first, I thought it was just literacy, that I wanted to just know what the Parsha was every week and what was in it. And finally, I decided I wanted to know enough that I had thought about something short to say at the Shabbos table. So to read it enough that there was, I had something to bring to the Shabbos table for conversation. One thought, question, insight, something. So that I had a specific goal for that. So so it might be that. You know, have something to say on the Parsha every week. Whatever your goal is, to articulate a learning goal. Okay, any more questions on that before we go on? Okay. Avodas Hashem, or Avodat Hashem, depending on how you pronounce Hebrew. That's divine service. So this could be anything that you're thinking about. Do you want to work on your tznius? Do you want to work on your blessings? Do you want to work on your kavana, on your intent? Do you want to work on greeting people with a smile? Do you want to work on giving people the benefit of the doubt? Like what area? Those are all things to work on, but what area do you want to focus on? What comes up for you that you're interested in working on? Excuse me, and that you'd like to make a commitment to working on this year. Again, writing it down does not mean there's a commitment necessarily. It's just something that you're writing down now. What comes up for you that you'd like to be working on in this area of serving God, which all the areas are, but specifically in that area. Character traits and emotions. What would you like to improve or handle differently than you have? How are you feeling about your emotions? This could be positive or negative. Is there enough simcha in your life? Is there too much anger in your life? Are you judging people too quickly? Are you tolerating people too long? Are you becoming a doormat? You know, how are your emotions working? Or character traits? You know, is there enough kindness? Do you feel like you're kind enough or you're patient enough or whatever it is? You don't have to go through a whole long list of all this, but you just want to think about what comes to the surface for you of what you'd like to consider working on this year. Hopefully by Shabbos, if you can do the homework of it, hopefully by Shabbos you'll have a document that's not, you're not saying I commit by writing that document, but I would like to put these on the front burner for this year, is basically what it is. You might be saying I commit, but certainly front burner. This is what you'd like to put on the front burner. Spouse and children. For this, and depending on if you have spouse and children, or maybe you have parents or siblings, but this would be your immediate family or people that you live very close with, those most important in your life. List each one of them and how you'd like to support or interact with or heal the relationship with or move to the next level with. So because there'll be lots of different people on this list who are close to you, and there may be different things you need to do with different ones. What would you like to do? And depending on if your document will be floating around and people might see it, you may want to write cryptically about each one. Just a little mnemonic for you. Or if you're going to keep it private, so you might want to write exactly what you're thinking, depending on what it is. Interpersonal relationships. So these are outside of your family. These are friends. These may be coworkers. These may be congregants. These may be neighbors. Who do you need to work with? What do you need to work with them on? And how? What's going on with that? And maybe it's you. Maybe it's just a theme in that you need to be more patient, or you need to be more giving, or you need to be more, create better boundaries in those relationships. So it might be a theme like that, or it might, again, be a short list of people and specific ways that you'd like to work with them. Increase your friendship with this one, increase your distance from that one, whatever it is. Health. What health issues need to be tended to, and how might you work towards good health? So that might be eating, that might be exercise, that might be, if you don't have a primary care doctor, finding one. Whatever it is for you, that might be getting the mammogram you've been putting off, or whatever it is, those things that you want to make a goal for this year, which health things do you want to be taking care of? Because you don't want your body getting in the way of the rest of the things that you want to do. Financial. How will you fix, better, or maintain your financial position? Let's say you're in a great position and you're the type that's really, you're completely organized, you're on top of your bills, you know everything, you know when you expect a check, you know everything's working, so you can just put a check there and say maintain as doing fabulous. Let's say you have a few questions financially. Either there's debt to pay off, or there's weddings to save for, or there's college tuitions to to finish paying, or student loans, or whatever it is, or a retirement to save for, or you're thinking about Aliyah, or so you have some financial goals. So this is a time to consider financial goals and how you might attack them. Professional concerns. So this is in your professional life, in your work life, if you have one. What needs attention there? That might, if you're a stay-at-home mom or full-time mom, that might cross over, or you might want to make that separate from the next one, which is domestic arts and or running a home. So your professional concerns, let's say if you're a full-time mother or caregiver, you might want to call that professional and make that separate, or you might want to put that into family, or you might want to put it into domestic arts or running a home. So, or you might want to make domestic arts and running a home just physical, or it might be emotional too. So you can really define how you want this, but in terms of running your home, so I put here physically, or your dwelling, because at first I put home, house, so home slash dwelling, depending on what you live in. What does it need? Do you need to update a room? Do you need to fix an appliance? Do you need to attend to your evaporative cooling system? Do you need to trim the trees? Do you need to, what do you need to make your home work well, so that your residence works out for you? And that could be the physical things in your home, or that could also be systems in your home. You know, do you feel like you're carrying too much of a burden in the cleanup or in the shopping or in the whatever it is, and how can you make sure that that works out with the people inside your home? And then physical concerns. This is not your body. This is outside of your body. Physical things that need attention. For instance, I'll just tell you what I had on my list last year. Cracks in the house, didn't take care of that. Carpets, working on taking care of that. Trees, got them trimmed. Vents in the kitchen, we did get them covered, and I replaced my windshield. So those are things I was putting off, but I just put them down as things that needed to be tended to. So those physical things that need attention. And then, hopefully from all this, some kind of theme has emerged, and this may be close to your tikkun, or maybe not, but what could you say might be your yearly direction? So, and that's why I say this is close to your tikkun. What is the one thing that I can work on in every realm that's going to universally affect me in every way? So, for me, that was the same, Seder. Seder was the important thing for me, professionally, personally, spiritually. All those areas would be affected by Seder if I worked on Seder. Probably be a yearly direction again. It's not been conquered, but
I'm wondering about that.
Hasn't been conquered. However, let's say one just made a general Seder yearly direction last year and feels like, oh my gosh, there's still so much Seder to be made, and yeah, I thought about it and it was clearly my yearly direction. You could the next year then make it more specific, you know, if you want to tackle part of it. Because let's say your tikkun or your yud or your yearly direction feels too big for you. Overwhelming. It's not something you can handle. Seder, it's huge, right? So let's say you want to divide that up depending on where it's acute for you. So you might want to just say financial Seder this year. That's the area I'm really going to focus on. Or spiritual Seder. Or educational Seder. Or an orderly room, bedroom. Or an orderly kitchen. Right, where you pick one room, not the whole house, but one room in the house or one area of your life. So, and that might be, let's say, for anger too. Let's say anger gets in your way. You're quick to anger and it's a problem for you. So you might, if you feel like you can't swing anger as a whole big topic, maybe one person. I'm going to work on anger towards my spouse this year, or anger towards my children, or anger towards myself, or anger towards God. You might pick a couple of those, or you might just pick one. But you might want to break it down into something you feel like you can handle and focus on this year as a specific task. You might want to still enumerate that anger altogether is your area of tikkun, but that your yearly direction is just one area that you feel like you can tackle for the year.
Liz, I have a question. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know if I'm going to phrase this right, but it seems like some of this is like really personal and things that you might want to discuss with a friend, mm-hmm. or a counselor rather than your husband. Mm-hmm. But it seems like there are goals that are appropriate where you'd want your husband on board or to be sharing, then because they're an intimate part of how a household runs, for example.
Right, right.
So can you give some...
Right. So, I mean, you could definitely... you can definitely work with a spouse or work with somebody who's close to you, on, especially if they're in the plan here. You may want to work with them in creating a plan that works, let's say, for household things. So you might want to talk to them about it. Let's say you don't, for whatever reason. You can take 100% of the responsibility yourself for making changes. That means that you're going to have to work with that person in other ways. You don't have to necessarily set them into the goals, but you might say, for instance, I'm feeling overwhelmed in the kitchen Seder, and I want to work on that, and so I am planning on working on making the kitchen work for me. That doesn't have to do with him in terms of setting it as a goal. It will have to do with him in terms of you working it out as a goal. So you don't necessarily have to consult in terms of setting it as a goal. That's your own self-knowledge. What do you need, and what do you feel like is getting in your way? So you can put that down. One thing that is important, though, in terms of all of these things, is in terms of all spiritual goals and directions, life paths, is your tripod of objectivity. Right? So I think I've mentioned that before, but here's your tripod of objectivity. Aselach HaRav, that's your rabbi or rebbetzin or your spiritual guide, whoever you have, but the person who knows more than you and is above you in terms of knowledge and processing. And then there's Knelecha Chaver, your friend, a peer, somebody who is your peer in understanding how things work in your life in general and spiritual stuff. You feel like they're a peer for you. And then there's Vaha'amidu Talmidim Harbe, have a lot of students. So people that you give to, not necessarily that are below you, but people that you give to or that you share with, they could be your children, they could be students, they could be friends in your life that you're often in a very giving position to, but those... triangulate, those three relationships triangulate on you. And you can go to them, one or two or three, depending on what the issue is, to discuss it and make sure that what you're doing is right. So for instance, let's say for Torah learning, you're thinking, I want it all. I often feel like, I don't know if you saw Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, and and the stuck-up little girl whose father is wealthy, and she, you know, makes him spend the whole factory goes unwrapping the chocolate bars, and she sings the song, "Give it to me now, I want it all now," right? And you see it in her face. But I feel like that with Torah learning, like, I want it all now. I want Rashi and Rambam and Tosfos, and I want Machshava and Musar, and I want it now. I don't have patience for it. I want it all now. So if I would go with that attitude and put on here that I am going to learn 4 hours a day, every single day, and enumerate what that is, well, that would be ridiculous, right? I'm setting myself up for failure, so I may want to consult with somebody. Do you think this is an appropriate spiritual goal for me? So that could be a friend or a rav, right? Or somebody who has perspective outside of you, right? So that sometimes you need that to help you set an appropriate goal. Whether it's working with your spouse sometimes, or working with children, or working with yourself, your own internal process. Sometimes you move too quickly spiritually, taking things on too fast because you get excited about it. You know, I'm never going to speak another word of Lashon Hara again. And since I know I've spoken a lot, I'm going to make sure I never talk about another person again. And since I know there's hardly anything to talk about except people, so I'm only going to ever talk in davening, talk to God through davening. That's it. I'm not talking anymore. So if you're like the type of person who's extreme like that, right, you may just want to run that by somebody and make sure that you're setting an appropriate goal for yourself, even if you're not 100% questioning.
Do you call that the tripod of what?
The tripod of objectivity. When I lived in New York, I subscribed to the Yeted Ne'aman newspaper, the Jewish Week, and Jerusalem Post. And I felt like that, in a way, was a tripod also. It triangulated on the news issues, because the Yeted is right-wing from newspaper. And Jerusalem Post is basically secular Israeli, although it does have some Torah points of view here and there in it, but it's very eclectic and mostly to the left. And the Jewish Week is quite to the left, quite secular, the newspaper of the Federation in New York, but is the Hoppin newspaper, Jewish newspaper of New York, that has all the interesting things in it. So it would be fascinating to read about the same thing in all different newspapers, because the points of view were so different. And that way you really could see kind of what was going on. So that's where it's helpful to have that tripod of objectivity. You should have somebody that you are consulting with. It can be a spouse, it can be a close friend, it can be somebody that you learn with, it can be a rav, it's in a spirit, it could be your therapist, but you do need somebody sometimes to help you run through this. So you might want to set your goals here and run them through with a friend. And maybe there's a few you don't want to, maybe you want to keep those private, but you might want to just make sure that you're setting goals that aren't too high and aren't too low. Also, sometimes a friend can say, you know, really, you know, you could actually accomplish a little bit more than that. You know, it seems like you're under-evaluating yourself. You're misunderestimating yourself again, as George Bush said. don't misunderestimate me. So you can. So again, you can take 100% of the responsibility yourself to move things forward, to make changes, and you can work in partnership with others. So you might want to say, you know, sweetheart, I've been working on thinking about my goals for the year, and I realized this has come up for me, and I was wondering if you would like to talk to me about how this might work better, or we might set a goal together, you know, or maybe you're interested in creating one of these, and some of our areas can intersect if we're in conversation together about this. So you could do that too. Sure. Anybody have other questions? Wow, I explained it so clearly. Great, yeah?
What was the student part of it? Have students around?
Oh, v'ha'amidu talmidim harbe. So those are all, have many students. So those are three directives from Pirkei Avot, or from different places in Chazal, from different sagacious sayings, to have many, to do those three things. Make a rav, okay. Thanks. Make a rav, have a friend, and have a lot of students.
But that piece of it is so that you have
people to get. So why in general to have students?
Yes.
So I think a few reasons you should be giving altogether. But learning, it's interesting, the word in Hebrew for learn and teach is the same root, right? Lilmod and lilamed, right? So one is pa'al and one is pl. Pa'al is the soft version of a verb, and pl is the harsh version of the same verb. So for instance, shavar, which is pa'al, is to break. Shiber, which is PL, is to shatter. Right? So it's the same word, it's just a more intense form. So that's what lamad and limaid is. Lamad, to learn. Limaid, to learn intensely. But it means to teach. So when you teach, you have to learn it enough. Hopefully what you're doing is not parroting or not just reading and explaining, but you've learned it enough that it's spilling out from you. That you bring it in so much that you overflow and you can share it with others. That's really what teaching should be. So, but it comes from an intense learning. That's why you call somebody who learns a lot a Talmid Chacham, not a Mora, right? You do call them that. That is the teaching, but a Talmid Chacham is somebody who's constantly learning but has acquired wisdom with their learning. But hopefully you can learn enough that the learning spills over and you're sharing it. So A is to give. B is because people need teachers. But C is because that's really your goal in your own learning, is that you should learn enough that you want to share it, that it flows out from you. It has to flow to somewhere. It's sort of like emulating Hashem in that derech hatov lahativ, the nature of good is to give. So, and that's why God made the world, because he's so good that he wants to give good. There's nothing to give to, so he created us to give good to. So it really should be that the nature, you should be the type, I mean, I think the ultimate in learning is learning so much that you want to share it. You're so excited, you just want to shout about it. You know, how cool is this? So you need students to shout about it too. You can have a chavrusa, but your chavrusa could be a student too, but you want to have that ability to share, but then also that sharpens your learning as your own student. You only really know it, you know if you know it, if you can teach it. Because you might have a concept that comes in and sits there and makes sense to you, you recognize it as true, and then you go home and you say, I heard this really cool thing, and your whoever says, what was it? And you say, like, it doesn't come out, because it's not yours yet, right? You learned it, but you didn't learn it enough yet that it flows out. So you can tell that you've learned it, not enough, but enough to be able to teach it when you can teach it, that it's a level of having learned it. That being said, I'm learning with Miriam also the importance of silence and how sometimes you ruin things that you learn by sharing it with others. So there's that can happen too. Sometimes you need to guard some of those things inside without sharing them. In terms of information, sharing them can be a good barometer of your knowledge of that thing. So lots of reasons. Yeah.
You know, last year I had some really good solid goals, nothing like too lofty, you know, just really achievable. And it turns out that this past year we worked to build a high school.
Mm-hmm.
It took more hours and more energy and more time than I could have ever planned on. So I really didn't meet most of my goals.
Mm-hmm.
There's just not a way to do that.
Right.
So when I'm looking at this year, you know, I'd like to think that I kind of can know a little bit about and kind of be able to plan and, you know, what I can take on. But what do you think about? Like, there are things that come up.
Yes,
and
excellent question.
It could be, you know, it could be lots of things.
It could be your daughter gets engaged. It could be your parents get sick. It could be you have a child with a disability. It could be you get moved across the country, whatever, for your business or whatever it is. Lots of things, right? So in that case, God has planned your yearly direction. And while it may be frustrating, yeah, it really is. So while it sometimes may be frustrating to let go of your plan, the truth is the higher goal is God's plan, because he's made it known to you. Your job this year is to marry off your daughter. Your job this year is to get that high school running. Your job this year is to take care of your mother, find a new care facility for her. Your job, whatever it is, right? Sometimes God makes those plans for you. And so you've made this plan, which doesn't mean it's not a good plan, but it does mean this is not the time to carry out that plan, because God gave you a different one. So you can actually move into that if you can recognize that he made the plan for you. It's much easier, rather than the high school getting in the way, or the wedding getting in the way, or the parent, or the illness getting in the way. If you can let go and recognize, oh, God made a plan for me this year, and I accept that. I move into that. How am I going to tackle that? How will I, you know... My two questions for tests, and I feel like I'm getting better at not always seeing them as tests, but my two questions for tests are, first one, how can I deal with this? And second one, how can I grow through this? So, and that depends on, it could be engagement, it could be a high school, it could be an illness, it could be whatever it is. How can I deal with this? My car is totaled, right?
Can you make the plan?
Right, so first you have to make the plan, right? My car is totaled, and I hurt my knee in it. Well, I'm not that injured, but I hurt my knee in it, right? So now I have to plan whatever the, you know, I have to take care of the stitches, and I have to take care of the car, and I have to take care of the insurance. How can I deal with this? I have to get a rental car, and I have to, right, make the appointments for physical therapy. I have to deal with this. And then, after I've gotten the physical stuff dealt with, how can I grow through this? You know, what does that mean that I'm living for a while? What does it mean that I need some extra help? What does it mean that I have to rearrange my schedule and figure out transportation? What does it mean that some money is going towards extra insurance rates or whatever it is? Like, how do I grow through this? What's the message that's there for me? Or what can, even if it's not a message that's there for me, how can I, now that I'm in physical therapy for my knee, how can I connect with that therapist? And maybe there's a friendship there, or maybe there's something she needs to hear from me, or maybe there's something I need to hear from her. How can I grow through this process? So how can I deal with this? How can I grow through this? Are the key questions for unexpected stuffs that happen in our life. I saw another question. Did you have a question?
I did. Yeah. I wanted to know the English of what you said. The nature of learning is to give.
To learn so much that you overflow with it into teaching.
No, the nature,
right,
of
nature
good
of,
is to
give. Oh, nature of good is to give.
That's
right. So I was making a comparison to the learning and the good. The nature of good is to give. So if God is defined as good, his nature is clearly to give. And we see that. I mean, that's why we make a kiddush when we're celebrating something, right? You have something happy, you want to share it with everybody, right? So you do something to share it. You make a phone call. You want to share good news, right? It's good. You want to share it. Sometimes you need support for the bad news, but the good news is overflowing. You want to bring people into that. You have a bris, you want to invite everybody to it. Whatever it is, you want to reach out and bring people into your simchas in your life, into the good things in your life. Sometimes you want to be careful what you share. You know, I mean, if you have a raise, so you want to share it with a few people, but you don't want to make people jealous necessarily. So you're going to be judicious. But you, there is that feeling when there's good, you want to share. So hopefully when you learn, you can learn in a way that you want to share. Yes, any other questions? Great, so I want to just wrap up then with this LL plan, which I encourage you to work on. Take home and try to get for yourself a rough draft by Friday, by Shabbos. The reason why it would be important to get the rough draft by Shabbos is because you can use those 5 days up to Rosh Hashanah. They're high energy days of recreation. So those would be days to start on a daily basis reviewing your LOL plan and tweaking it, making sure that that's what you want to go into the year with. So you have the rough draft by Shabbos, and then over Shabbos you're thinking about it. Those days you're thinking about it, you can work with it on Rosh Hashanah too. But that this is the plan that you want to go into, and you can even start some of this. Because those are 5 special days of creating new starts, because that's when the world was made on those days. If I would know more, and probably Miriam can fill me in now that she listened to Rabbi Tatz, I'm sure each day has its own specific energy. I just don't know what it is. But that would be a goal to learn about further for next year. Day 1, day 2, day 3, day 4, how they, and 5, how do they differentiate from each other? Not just a creation energy generally, but I'm guessing that each day has a specific energy that we could access if we would know how to do that. But meanwhile, there is an energy of new starts, of creation, of freshness. And so that would be something you'd want to put this plan into, making starts in the year, making inroads. There's a lot of spiritual power to be gained in those days. So, and next week, this class will be Monday night, because Tuesday night is the night right before Rosh Hashanah. So, pardon? Wednesday night is Rosh Hashanah. Tuesday night's the night right before Rosh Hashanah, so many people might be preparing then. So for any of you who are here for the Labor Day weekend, Monday night will be next week's class, and next week we'll be looking at the Rosh Hashanah davening and how you can use this document and the Cheshbon HaNefesh that we created last week, find some of that in the davening, and what the kavana of the day is. What's the avoda of Rosh Hashanah, and how do you access that in the tefillas of the day? So, yeah. Yeah.
What was the Hebrew that you used for women learning? For men it was Lishma.
Lishma. For women it's Uvachain. That's Tzipora Heller's word. Uvachain. And so. That's what it means. And so, dot, dot, dot. Great.
Okay.